Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. Since 1916, Farm Credit Illinois has been helping farm families succeed, providing farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing. Farm Credit Illinois joins in celebrating the rich history of Illinois agriculture.
From the land-grant university in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the second day of June 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting from Channel Seeds in Windsor, Illinois, will be here too to take a look at the cash grain market. And along the way, we'll discuss just exactly how a fungicide can improve the feed efficiency of a dairy cow. Well, a fungicide on corn, more importantly, a fungicide only on silage. That'll all happen during this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
It was a big day in Chicago. Corn futures, though, ended just a penny and a half higher at $4.15 and a quarter. In the July contract, September at $4.15 and three quarters, three quarters higher. In December, up a half at $4.16 and three quarters. March corn at $4.22 and three quarters, down a quarter of a cent. The big day in the soybeans and the bean complex in general. July contract there at $11.44 and a quarter. 44 and a half cents higher. August at 11:30 and three quarters, up 35 and a quarter. September at 11:02 and a half, up 23 and a half. November, that's your new crop, just 13 and a quarter cents higher now at $10.81 and three quarters on its settlement. The January at 10.77 and three quarters, up 13 and a quarter. Bean oil futures 7 cents higher, 32.26. Bean meal up $19.20 at $418.30. Soft red winter wheat, July contract up 11 and three quarters at $4.85 and a half. September at $4.96 and a quarter, 11 and a quarter higher. July hard red at $4.64 and a half, up 8 and a half. The September at $4.80 and three quarters, 8 and a half cents higher as well. Live cattle futures in Chicago, June contract at $121.70, 27 and a half higher. August at $117.65, up 20 cents. August feeder cattle, $146.37 and a half, 5 cents lower. September at $145.10, that's up 25 cents. In lean hogs for the day, the June contract, $82 even, up 85 cents. July at $84.30 per 100 pounds, up $1.50. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Sure, be sure to visit our website this evening after 5 o'clock. We'll post our Commodity Week program. Our panelists this week include Dan Zwicker, along with Aaron Curtis and Bill Mayer. Commodity Week on willag.org after 5 tonight.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
Here's how some of the outside markets are trading. Crude oil at this hour at $49.02 a barrel, a penny higher. Ethanol futures at $1.68 and 2 tenths. That's up 3 and 2 tenths. The wholesale price of gasoline, $1.62 and 7 tenths. That's a penny and 2 tenths of a cent higher on the RBOB. The heating oil or diesel fuel at $1.50 and 4 tenths of a cent, a half of a cent higher. And natural gas for the day, a penny and 9 tenths higher at $2.40 even. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, now 27 points higher at 17,806. The U.S. dollar at 95.565 is up 0.114. And the gold futures for the day at $1,210.50 are down $1.40. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area. 78 degrees, nearly 79 outside right now. Tonight, some clouds will drop to a low of 58 degrees and a north-northwest wind at 5 to 10. And then tomorrow, more sunshine, a little clouds. 84 degrees for the high. Winds will be light and variable tomorrow. Friday night, partly cloudy early with some increasing clouds overnight. The low just 61 degrees. Winds light and variable. And on Saturday, scattered thunderstorms in the morning. Then mainly cloudy during the afternoon with thunderstorms likely. A few storms may be severe Saturday. The high 79 degrees on a southwest wind at 10 to 15. Chance of rainfall set at 80% for Saturday day and 60% for Saturday evening. Will drop to 61 degrees on a west wind by then at 5 to 10 miles an hour. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is a production of the University of Illinois. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. It is the second day of June. We're now joined by Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, to take a look at a really odd marketplace for the day. I can't quite understand why it is that soybeans rallied so sharply. Do you have a good idea?
Well, I think it's continued fallout of the short South American crop. And in this case, the rumors were one or two big houses that trade in options are short the July calls, and they're out like $80 to $100 million apiece. And I think probably what they're forced to do here is to come in and buy July futures against those short calls. And that is what I think bubbled up the soybean market here today. And then that kind of spilled over into all the rest of the contracts.
How will we get confirmation on this? Can we see this on the regular CME Group data?
Well, we might be able to see what happened on open interest. We'll have to maybe see what the Traders Commitments Report shows us. But that'd be the first thing I'll be looking at, see what happened in open interest, whether it declined or expanded, and which months it did that. And then we'd have to see what maybe happened over in the option market, too. So that's something, though, if that is the case, a lot of these instances, when they blow out of their positions like that with a big loss, that kind of puts in at least a temporary top in the marketplace, and it may go down as something more permanent. We don't know. But anybody that's been trying to sell into this soybean market the last couple of months has just got their head handed to them. I know people started a lot of your commercial grain companies are in the advisory business now, and they begin to have farmers sell into that $9 beans, $9.25, $9.50. A lot of them had the accumulator contracts, so they got doubled up. So you did have a lot of new crop selling of soybeans, and of course they just got their head handed to them here with beans, November beans almost reaching the $11 mark here today. Corn, I would suspect that the way the market acted today, we did see a pickup of both old and new crop selling of both corn and soybeans, I think. So that's probably what kind of pushed corn off this high. It reached some pretty good levels and at least offered some farmers, the opportunity of selling some 390 type cash corn, maybe for fall delivery, depending upon their bases and whatnot. So we did see a pickup of farmers selling that kind of pushed the corn market down.
You think this was an okay opportunity for farmers to make new crop corn sales?
Well, it's a lot better than what it was 2 months ago.
That would be hard to do.
But everybody has to look at their own balance sheet and how much they're willing to risk and how much they're willing to forego as opportunity gains. But now we're at least up to 1050 type new crop cash sales for beans or better. I wouldn't object to selling some there. I think those are actually profitable levels. I think selling them down there at $9, where it was more of a break-even situation, I didn't think that was a very good, wise move. But at least now we're at profitable levels on soybeans. New crop corn, depending upon what the yield is, of course, everybody is worried about whether or not this La Nina will kick in and we'll have a hot and dry July, August. That's a ways down the road yet. But these are at least some opportunities. The thing that I would point out, and I did that last week, is the calendar year highs, there's a lot, very often corn and soybeans will make their calendar year highs during the months of June and July. Now, the question is, are we doing it early June or are we going to do it late June? and that June 30th stocks and acres report is going to be a killer one way or the other for one commodity or the other. But one thing that does worry me a little bit, when you start off the month making new highs for the year, it does open up the gates anyway that if you can't continue to maintain the upside momentum, you could end up closing out the month with a monthly reversal down. So that's what would worry me a little bit. So I think there's some yellow flags out here, but this is, you know, a lot much better selling opportunity than there has been for some time anyway.
So we have had and continue to have fundamental and now some other reasons for the soybean market to rally and to stay high. I don't think those will change. At least not in the very short term. They may, with the size of the acreage and the size of the crop, a bit later. However, corn, when we have a 44-cent rally in the July soybeans and only a penny and a half rally in July corn, seem to be the much weaker of the two.
Well, sure, true. And I think like I said, this is still fallout of the shortness of the South American crop. People were carrying those short calls, and the market climbed up on them, and now they have to bail out of them at losses. If you remember one of the reports, July beans shot up like 30 cents, and November beans, there was a carrying charge. Everybody, the big deal last winter, everybody was going to make beans into a carrying charge market because of the big South American crop, and that did not materialize. So now you got a premium market where the old crop months are stronger. And the reason I think most of it is everybody got terribly short. Nobody had their beans covered. They didn't have their soybean meal covered, betting that we would have lower prices at this time of year rather than making new season highs. People were terribly bearish back in that January, February time frame. And now, you know, now we're making, you know, calendar year highs here when we normally or seasonally do.
We'll take some more time this afternoon during Commodity Week. Thanks for being a panelist this afternoon, by the way, and discuss it again.
Very well.
All right, we'll call you then. That, of course, is Dan Zwicker. He's with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, and he will be one of our panelists along with Aaron Curtis and Bill Mayer on Commodity Week. You can hear that program this evening on our website at willag.org, posted there probably around 5 o'clock, certainly by 6 o'clock, unless I have a real technical difficulty. And then again tomorrow during the day, you'll hear it on our program right here, immediately following the closing market report on Friday afternoon on most of these radio stations. Many of them carry it on Saturday morning as well. In today's agricultural news, Chinese pork prices have climbed to new record highs, signaling its auctions of frozen pork reserves, and other measures to boost production are doing little to cool that market. Farmers are holding back pigs from slaughter as they work to rebuild herds after the industry was engaged in widespread culling 2 years ago. Additionally, stringent new environmental rules have forced many small-scale producers out of the market. As a result, Rabobank expects China to import a record 1.5 million metric tons of pork in 2016, possibly helping China to surpass Japan as the world's top importer. The increase could be a boon for major pork exporters like the United States and Germany. On the subject of red meat exports, the U.S. Meat Export Federation says improving access to China is a top priority of the organization. That's according to the Federation's president and CEO, Philip Singh.
We're working aggressively to try to improve our access that we have as far as beef is concerned. The Russian market has been closed for a long time, and that really engendered the Europeans to really look aggressively for new markets. And of course, they focus on North Asia, probably one of the hottest areas as far as imports are concerned.
Like other commodities, the strength of the U.S. dollar is hurting meat exports, primarily beef. The Federation's board of directors met last week in St. Louis, Missouri. Singh added the meeting allowed producers from across the United States to meet with international buyers to sell the idea of American meat overseas. Well, let's stay in the food category, but we'll move to Washington, D.C., where the Food and Drug Administration yesterday released the agency's long-awaited voluntary guidance on salt intake for Americans. The draft guidance focuses on reducing the salt used in processed and restaurant foods by one-third over 10 years. The FDA says the reduction is recommended because Americans get 70% of their sodium from those foods. The FDA says current average adult intake of sodium is approximately 3,400 milligrams per day, and the FDA's goal is to reduce consumption to 2,300 milligrams. The FDA says the reduction would result in tens of thousands fewer cases of heart diseases and stroke each year, as well as billions of dollars in health care savings over time. The FDA says the targets are voluntary because sodium is important to taste, texture, and microbial safety. And finally today, this on a Supreme Court ruling this week which allows farmers and ranchers to challenge clean water regulations. Michael Clements of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting has more.
The Supreme Court this week ruled landowners may challenge the federal government whenever the Army Corps of Engineers tries improperly to regulate land with regulations designed to protect water. American Farm Bureau Senior Counsel for Public Policy Danielle Quist says the ruling means farmers and ranchers can challenge the Environmental Protection Agency and the Corps of Engineers on jurisdictional determinations.
When a farmer or rancher gets an approved jurisdictional determination that's issued by the Corps of Engineers, if they believe that the Corps of Engineers has overstepped the bounds of the Clean Water Act, after they exhaust all of their administrative remedies, they can file a lawsuit in federal court.
Quist says the unanimous ruling by the Supreme Court will save farmers and ranchers time and money when it comes to jurisdictional determinations.
They have that option to go to court and not spend years trying to get a permit they may never get, or a permit they may not be able to accept and then have to go to court at that later period of time. It speeds things up. They don't have to wait years to find out whether their land is subject to Clean Water Act jurisdiction.
She says the ruling by the Supreme Court could have implications on the Waters of the U.S. rule, as three Supreme Court justices wrote separate concurring opinions expressing concerns on the reach of the Clean Water Act. Michael Clements, Washington.
And that's a look at today's agricultural news. June is National Dairy Month. Spraying a fungicide on corn in the Midwest has always been a 50-50 proposition. It's related to cost. Half the time, it bumps yield by a couple of bushels, and this can sometimes be enough to cover the cost. However, if that corn is going into silage, some new work from the University of Illinois says the improvement in feed efficiency for dairy cattle can pay for the fungicide not just once, but maybe twice. This is simple science to understand, yet it's important to note it seems only to apply to milk production. So, not for beef cattle. Dairy cows, fed silage from corn sprayed with a fungicide, give more milk, says University of Illinois dairy scientist Phil Cardoso.
In the dairy cows, what we've seen is that they gain feed efficiency. So, especially because we fed, in our experiments, we fed to cows after peak of lactation. So that means after 60, 70 days in milk. So cows really, they start giving less and less milk every month from after the peak. So what we saw was that those cows, to produce the same milk, they ate less of that material, of the corn silage.
Well, the reason this happens is because the leaves of the corn plant, when harvested for silage, are in better condition. They're greener and more digestible. Interestingly enough, says Cardoso, there isn't any change in the total mass or weight of the material harvested, so no yield bump, just a healthier plant made that way because the leaves are protected from fungal diseases.
In our trials, we had linear responses, so that means applying one time, two times, or three times. Three times was even better than one time. However, when we put the economic on it, more than two applications were not worth it. And most likely, one application, you always going to get a return on it.
One application of a corn fungicide improves silage feed efficiency. The statement has been true in the U of I field trial since 2013, and it's not related to the presence of a fungal disease in the field. The silage contains less fiber and more sugar. This improves the fermentation process, improves the quality of feed, and improves the feed efficiency of the dairy cows. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Thursday afternoon. Let's check now the cash grain market with Matt Bennett. He's at Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Matt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, we heard from Dan Zwicker about the reasons behind the soybean rally, that there might be a couple of big houses that were caught. That tells me that this could be a short-term rally, potentially. What do you think farmers with old crop soybeans should do?
Yeah, I told you off the air, I think two things. First of all, be thankful that they've still got them. Second of all, sell them. I mean, but I will say there's been one thing consistent about my soybean advice the last several months, and that's been that I've been wrong. So, you know, take that with a grain of salt. But I don't think that you can go wrong. How do you go wrong selling beans $2.50 above where they were a couple months ago? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's just no reasons why a person shouldn't step in and sell them if they're lucky enough to still have.
Now turn your attention to the new crop for both corn and soybeans. Anything different there?
Well, on soybeans, I'm still wanting to sell. People haven't really gotten enough sold yet. I definitely want to get to maybe a third sold and put floors under a good chunk of my beans at the very least. Definitely seeing a little more movement as far as marketing some new crop corn, getting into that 30 cent above the spring insurance price, gotten guys a little more interested. So we've saw some guys getting started. We've been very patient on corn, and we're getting a little more active right now, but we're not getting too aggressive either.
Are you waiting for a weather sparked rally in the United States for that to happen?
Well, I think it would be interesting to see kind of where our acreage comes in, first of all. You know, a lot of forecasts are for a hotter summer, not necessarily a drier one, but if we get heat, there'll definitely be pockets that'll be streaming moisture at points in time. So, you know, I don't want to get super aggressive just yet, but as I said, we're definitely getting a good start. We're taking a cautious approach and trying to evaluate the situation as the summer unfolds.
The first condition report for the corn crop came out Monday, national condition report, that is. It showed 72% of the crop was in good or excellent
yep.
condition. That's one percentage point better than the 30-year average. How are things in your area?
Things in our area look pretty darn good. You know, there's definitely some, probably some nitrogen deficiencies based upon the wet spring. Seeing a lot of applicators running, trying to side dress. And I think that's probably the thing to do. You know, I would say in our immediate area, though, the corn crop looks really good. I wouldn't say excellent, but it definitely looks very good. I don't think there's too many guys complaining about it at this point.
Have you been to the south and the east of you? Did they get all caught up? And that probably is just popping out of the ground maybe last week.
Yeah, I mean, I know some guys have said that they aren't done. You know, they're not done with, planting their corn even whenever you get very far south of us. So, you know, you got to hope for those guys' sake that they're able to get it in the ground if they're going to stay with corn. But I definitely think that there's certain areas in the Midwest that we're going to see a fair amount of switching go on.
Is there much corn old crop left to sell, and what's going to happen there?
I think there's a fair amount of old crop corn still. You know, I talk to guys on a regular basis and say, you know, I'm really lucky that I've been able to hold on this long. What do you think I should do? And, you know, anytime you get a rally of the magnitude that we've had, even with corn, it's starting to get fairly serious. A person can't go wrong by selling at that point. You know, if it goes on up, it goes on up. And I don't know too many folks that are going to sell all of what they have left on any one certain day. But if they're profitable on that day, I don't see anything wrong with doing so.
Thanks so much.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, lending support to generations of farm families for 100 years. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
It's National Hazelnut Cake Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1857, a farmer, James Gibbs of Mill Point, Virginia, invented the first practical U.S. chain stitch sewing machine. It went for $50, half the price of anything similar of the day. In 1886, U.S. President Grover Cleveland married Frances Folsom, with a ceremony taking place in the White House. Cleveland is the only president to be married in the White House. In 1928, Velveeta cheese was created by Kraft. It was packaged in a tin foil lined wooden box. When melted, it was smooth as velvet, hence the name. By the way, Kraft's first factory was in Stockton, Illinois in 1914. In 1943, John Frank Stevens died. Stevens, an American civil engineer, was in charge of the Panama Canal project from 1905 to 1907. He planned the major features of the waterway and lobbied openly for a high-level type lock canal, which was realized with the president's signature in 1906. And in 2003, the USDA declared that frozen, batter-coated French fries are fresh vegetables. And a year later, a federal judge agreed, saying the term fresh vegetables was ambiguous. By the way, USDA had unsuccessfully tried in 1981 to classify ketchup and pickle relish as vegetables. Public protest caused them to drop the idea. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, joined now by Mike Tenura, T-Storm Weather out of Chicago. Mike, thanks for being with us. What can we expect in the weather this week?
Well, the forecast through the weekend is a little challenging, but we can kind of see what's happening here. There's essentially two systems that will move across the Midwest. One moves across the Great Lakes, and one moves further to the south across the Delta. They merge into one somewhere near Michigan or into Ontario around Sunday, and that'll make two things happen. Number one, we'll see scattered showers and storms across the northern fringe of corn and soybeans over the weekend. Number two, we'll see a pretty big swath of heavy rain affect the Delta and the far southeastern Corn Belt, so southern Illinois, southern Indiana, and the southeast third to half of Ohio. These areas will see a good rainfall tomorrow and Saturday. But other than that, most areas just see scattered showers, and it stays mostly dry through Sunday.
Do we have any changes in the pattern coming?
Well, the pattern is turning much more interesting once we get into next Wednesday and Thursday. We can see that a big heat wave is going to assemble in the west, starting up this weekend and then continuing into early next week. Once we get into the middle and end of next week, the Corn Belt will essentially start to be affected by this system. We'll be a little bit cool in the Corn Belt for the next 5 or 6 days, but once that coolness diminishes, it will allow that upper level high that's creating the heat in the west to at least temporarily expand across the southwest half of corn and soybeans, beginning Wednesday and Thursday next week, and then more than likely lasting, you know, for at least several days.
Anything else that we need to discuss before we let you go for the day?
Well, we'll need to keep an eye on rainfall. I mean, we can see that it's going to turn warmer late next week, and we also know that along the northern edge of this area of warm to hot weather, there will be thunderstorms. That'll be primarily from the northern plains through northern areas of the Corn Belt. At the same time, areas to the south nearest the core of the warmest weather will stay mostly dry later next week and then into the following week, so through about mid-June. That leaves key corn and soybean areas between best rain chances in the north and lowest rain chances in the south. So this is something that we'll need to keep an eye on, not so much right now, but more in a week from now. You know, and this is always the risk that we've been worrying about, is that it would turn warmer, with the main uncertainty being rainfall. We can see it'll turn warmer, at least temporarily, but rainfall still a bit uncertain beyond the next 7 to 10 days.
Thank you so much, Mike.
Have a good one, Todd.
Mike Tenores with T-Storm Weather from Chicago, Illinois, joins us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Don't forget to visit our website at WILLAG.org. This evening, we'll post Commodity Week there by about 5 o'clock. Dan Zwicker is among our guests, as you already know, along with Bill Mayer and Aaron Curtis. Commodity Week, it's our weekly look at what's been happening in the world of agricultural markets. Should be a great program, posted by about 5 o'clock to the website tonight at willag.org, and you'll hear it right here on this hour tomorrow afternoon during the Closing Market Report Commodity Week program. I'm Yovi Extension's Todd Gleason.